Hello, everyone, and thanks for joining us today for another episode of the Medicinal Herbs Podcast from Holistic Matters. As always, I'm your host, Dr. Dana Perrin, and this month we have Jo Boyd back on our show. She's a naturopathic clinician and medical herbalist from Australia, and she's been active in complementary medicine for over 20 years, including lecturing about herbal medicine all around the world. Jo, it's really great to have you on the show again, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me, Dana.
So first off, we have heard a lot about ADHD over the years. You know, it's in the news. Many times it might come up in the context of children, but a lot of people don't really understand or know what ADHD is. So can we just begin with the basics? You know, what is ADHD? Are there distinct types and presentations of ADHD that we might want to be aware of?
Absolutely. And I think that's a really great place to start. So there are various types and how people will present with ADHD. So there's inattentive, there's the hyperactive, impulsive, or perhaps it may be a combination of both. So what you'll be seeing in your patients if they're presenting with inattentive ADHD or ADD, it used to be called, they're what I consider to be the absent-minded professors. So it's not that they're not intelligent by any stretch of the your imagination, but they just seem to get distracted easily. They tend to lose focus. People may often consider them to be daydreamers. They often have trouble staying on task. So at times it feels like they're not listening, they're having trouble following directions, or they can miss out on important details or make careless mistakes. So as a result of all that, they do have trouble completing tasks. And what can tend to happen as a result is that they tend to avoid things that require a lot of mental effort. And this is something that can continue through to adulthood if people are presenting with ADHD. And then we have the hyperactive, and they're what I call the wriggly worms. They're in constant motion. There's a wonderful poem, and it was a poem that was published, I think, in 1846, and it was about a boy called Fidgety Philip, and it was written by a German psychiatrist. And it describes a child with typical ADHD symptoms. And it's actually claimed that this is the first documentation of historical references in relation to ADHD. And it begins with something like, "Phil, stop acting like a worm. The table is no place to squirm," which I think beautifully illustrates the hyperactive nature of ADHD. So they are very fidgety. They seem very restless. Trouble sitting still. It's like they've got ants in their pants, which is a saying we have here in Australia. And often they'll have trouble keeping quiet when needed. They may seem to get bored really easily or rush through things and make careless mistakes. And they're the type of child or adult who seems to have a lot of energy and is really finding or desperate for a way to channel that energy. And they may sometimes act in ways that tend to disrupt others, even though that's not intentional. And then the impulsive aspect of it is when someone presents, where they act before they think, or they say things before they think about it. They're often the person that will answer a question before the question's even completed. And they find it hard to wait for things. As children, they have trouble taking turns and they don't want to wait for permission for things. Often what that can lead to as we go through adolescence and even adulthood is perhaps risky behaviour and not being aware of the consequences or the dangers around risky behaviour. So not all children or adolescents or adults will present with all of the symptoms at one time or only specific symptoms within a particular classification. Often they'll present with combinations of symptoms. And we also have quite a list of coexisting conditions and comorbidities that we need to be aware of as well. And I should highlight, when we're talking about ADHD, I know we talk a lot in relation to children, and although it's typically diagnosed in the childhood years, it can absolutely present or persist into adolescence and adulthood. And it's said that around about 80% of children who are diagnosed continue to meet that diagnostic criteria and display symptoms through to their adolescence ages and stages. And about up to 70% will continue to have some type of symptoms as adults. So potentially what we're looking at is a lifetime support and a lifetime challenge. And it is absolutely a global health challenge. And studies have shown that it's actually being found in virtually every country where ADHD has been investigated. And I think that's it in a very broad overview. Of course, as we know, everybody can present differently. And I think the beauty about what we do and what we do very well as healthcare professionals is we always address our patients as individuals and we will prescribe and support appropriately. So I hope that helps to give quite a broad overview, but enough detail for the listeners to understand the nuances and the subtle differences between them both.
And I just find it fascinating that ADHD is found globally now. That's very interesting, something I didn't know. I want to go back to something you mentioned earlier, coexisting conditions. What are the main coexisting conditions that you're seeing?
I think first and foremost, probably the one that we see most often is various anxieties. And studies have shown that up to 50% of children with ADHD will experience some type of anxiety. And this could present as fear or worry or panic. And it can get to the point where it's difficult for people and children to actually function when they are so riddled with anxieties. And what we can do is we can actually look for the physical attributes of anxieties as well, such as irritable bowel syndrome, increased sweating, children who, wet the bed at night or do spontaneous, wetting or racing pulses. So there's things that we can certainly look for in relation to anxiety. But I think that, I do wonder if it's not only a consequence of ADHD and a contributing factor, but I also think that it's a result of modern day living. Another one that we need to look for, of course, is low mood and depression. And it's really challenging for people who do have ADHD. It's not only the learning difficulties that they can experience and the focus challenges, but it's also the social aspect of having ADHD as well. Sometimes it can be difficult to understand, social cues and engage in ways that others would. So it can lead to, low mood and a bit of some depression. And so this is absolutely an additional layer that needs to be addressed. And learning difficulties, as I've mentioned, whilst ADHD, of course, is not a learning disability itself, it can certainly lead to it and be a consequence of it. And then we have more, I guess, intense conditions such as oppositional defiant disorder. And this can be present in up to 35% of people with ADHD. And this is where we have a challenge in managing behaviour. They're very quick to anger, to temper. They're very defiant in their nature and can often seem quite hostile towards authority figures. So this, of course, can lead to higher risk behavior and getting, into trouble later in life. And another one I did want to mention before I forget is sleep difficulties. So this can be a consequence of ADHD. It can be a result of perhaps medication if they're on medication. And it can certainly be a driving factor as well. So difficulty getting to sleep, nighttime waking, shorter sleep duration, and morning fatigue, and also sleep apnea. That's something that I'll always look for as well, because the signs and symptoms of poor sleep, if you think about it, do present in a very similar manner to ADHD.
So I really like that you mentioned the different layers of this condition, because you mentioned so many different pieces here. You mentioned, the physical manifestations, GI disturbances, social changes, sleep difficulties. And this is certainly a lot to take into consideration when addressing ADHD. So can you offer some guidance or maybe an overview of where to start with these patients?
Yeah. And look, it is a lot. I do understand and appreciate that. I think another thing that we do really well as healthcare professionals and practitioners is we take thorough case histories, and we also look at what are the root causes of whatever it is our patients are presenting with. So one of the initial steps or approaches that I have and I recommend when we're looking at ADHD is, firstly, let's rule out any other potential possibilities that perhaps are presenting with ADHD-like symptoms. Let's always, you just mentioned the gut there, let's always look at the gut and look at a healthy gut-brain barrier. We know that very significant relationship of the gut and the brain and neurotransmitters and so forth. We also need to look at, is this child or this person having a reaction to an abnormal situation? So these hypersensitivities of the nervous system that we see in ADHD are, you know, different to a child that is perhaps understimulated and overly energetic and perhaps simply bored, that can result in this misplaced energy and this these outbursts. Or on the other hand, is it that they're absolutely overstimulated, they're exhausted and they're depleted from life's busy pace and all of these commitments that they seem to have? So we need to look at how are they reacting normally to perhaps a stressful situation. It could be as simple as getting their hearing checked. So were their ears congested, from infection, or are they not hearing well? Is it a structural problem? So my advice always to parents, regardless of whether you're a child presenting with ADHD or not, is get your child's ears or hearing tested and their eyes tested as well before they start school, because we need to rule out the potential of it being that perhaps they're just not hearing well and that's why they're seeing to be lacking focus or having learning difficulties. And then coming back to that sleep as well, this is a significant one to look for, because if you think about the results of poor sleep, children do feel irritated. They have trouble with focus and attention and seem to have emotional outbursts as well. There was a study that was done with sixth graders, and the results of this study showed that the loss of 1 hour of sleep per night was equivalent to the loss of 2 years of cognitive maturation and development. So I think that really illustrates the need for good quality sleep, because when we sleep, that's when we have that that laying down and solidifying all of that newly acquired information throughout the day. And many of the behavioural problems that we see that can impact ADHD are identical to those who do have sleep problems. So is it that they're having worries and anxieties and can't get to sleep and are having trouble staying asleep? Is it, you know, a blood sugar issue or a protein issue? Or is it a functional issue such as obstructive sleep apnea, which is quite common in younger children? So what we're seeing is that children who don't get that good quality sleep, they do have an increase in impulsivity and hyperactivity. They can suffer from mood problems and they can have learning or academic performance and cognitive issues as well. What are some other things? Look, some other things, of course, look at diet, look at sugar, dairy, wheat, food additives, salicylates. Although, you know, food additives, for example, can exacerbate the symptoms of ADHD. Perhaps they're not necessarily the root cause of the disorder, but we can look at triggers for exacerbation. In addition to essential fatty acids, which probably the listeners are very aware of being very effective for ADHD, also look at things like iron deficiency. One of the most common nutritional deficiencies, apparently, in US school children is iron deficiency. And studies have shown that 85% of children with ADHD actually had low serum ferritin levels. So the signs and symptoms of low iron can present, once again, very much like ADHD. So poor attention span, forgetfulness, decrease in alertness and lethargy. There's another interesting aspect in regards to iron is that it's been shown to protect the blood-brain barrier against lead insults. And if you're not across the impact of lead and heavy metals, not just on ADHD, but the fact that lead is, you know, it does have neurotoxic effects on the brain and how it can attack the brain, it's really alarming. So heavy metals, specifically looking at lead, is something that I highly recommend people research and across. Garlic, you know, simple, wonderful, effective garlic. I know I've done a podcast on the amazing attributes of garlic. One of them is its ability for heavy metal chelation, specifically for lead. So, you know, garlic is by far my favorite herb for addressing lead toxicity. Something else that people should be considering as well is pinworms or threadworms. And it's estimated about 25 million Americans suffer from pinworms. And it's not surprising because it's so easily to contract pinworms. So in addition to itching and nighttime waking, people with, and children specifically with pinworms seem to be squirming and irritable and have behavioral and attention problems as well. So if you have a child who has unexplainable behavioral issues, check them for worms. So that's where I think I've covered everything. That's, you know, where I would actually start is by ruling out everything else that could potentially be causing and resulting in these symptoms. And I think a big part of that is taking a really thorough case history.
Well, Joe, thank you so much for this guide. I've just been taking notes as you've been going through, you know, case history. I think the ears and the eyes piece, make sure that we get those checked before the kids start school. Valuable information, sometimes, probably a lot of times overlooked. You know, we have to assess the sleep patterns, the blood sugar, the diet, sleep apnea, iron deficiency, heavy metals, pinworms, so yep. many different pieces to this. And then, of course, you started to allude to some herbs. So you mentioned garlic. Do you have other favorites for addressing ADHD?
Oh, for sure. And of course, herbs, one of my favorite topics in the world. Some of my favorites when we're looking at ADHD and specifically looking at focus and concentration, which is a big aspect of ADHD. First and foremost, my favorite is bacopa. It's a really beautiful traditional Ayurvedic herb, and it's often practitioners' first choice for addressing ADHD, and it's considered to be the specific herbal support or remedy for ADHD. And it's this wonderful treasured Ayurvedic herb. It's been used, it's got thousands of years of history as a rejuvenating tonic and part of that Rasayana group of herbs. And also it has been used to support brain and cognitive function. So in Ayurveda, it's considered to be, as I said, this Rasayana group of herbs. And these are herbs that are very much about supporting healthy aging, re-establishing our youth, and promoting health and longevity. But another really valuable aspect of these Rasayana herbs, particularly with bacopa, is it's said to strengthen the life of the brain and the mind, which I think is a really, you know, impressive attribute. So they said that regular consumption of these class of herbs are considered really valuable for improving learning, improving cognitive function and our ability to learn, and also focus and concentration. So from a Western herbal medicine perspective, we do consider it to be cognitive, enhancing and a lovely nerving tonic. It has mild, relaxing and sedative activity, as well as anxiolytic activity also. So as you can see from looking at the herbal actions alone, we really are addressing many of the things that we're seeing in ADHD. And there have been studies that have shown, you know, bacopa taken alone or as part of a herbal combination can significantly improve attention and learning, but at the same time, reducing that restlessness and that impulsivity that we see in people and children with ADHD. So there has been a lot of research for bacopa, and not just with ADHD, but overall for supporting healthy memory and learning, is the acquisition of new memory, the storage and retention of new information, so laying down that information. It's said to boost cognitive performance really well and improving mental well-being and our alertness and our ability to stay on task and stay focused. But at the same time, as I've already mentioned, it has that wonderful aspect of also supporting stress and anxiety and you know, our overall nervous system. So I do think for that, it is one of my favourites, not only for ADHD, but also for students and busy executives who are under stress, who also need to be mentally alert. So it's really helping them to stay on task and feeling relaxed. Now, it's not the herb that you take just before an exam or a presentation and expect it to work. That's where, you know, ginkgo really shines. Bacopa is more about that medium to long-term memory. But it is, for all of the reasons that I've mentioned, a really valuable and meaningful herb to have in our dispensaries when we are looking or supporting patients with ADHD. And of course, you know, ginkgo absolutely is worth a mention as well. And this is a key herb for short-term memory, quick recall. I remember hearing Kerry Bone once say it helps you feel like Einstein for a day. And then my ears pricked up and I thought, how many do I need to take? And many scholars and historians actually believe that Albert Einstein had ADHD. And if you think about that and to put things into perspective and have a look at what he accomplished in his lifetime, that's really impressive. So ginkgo is really well known for supporting peripheral circulation, but also cerebral circulation as well. And we consider it to be a brain tonic, or really supporting brain function. It improves memory, but at the same time, it also increases mental sharpness and improves attention span. There was a particular study that I often talk about that examined the short-term or the acute effects of a combination of Korean ginseng and ginkgo, and this was on mental performance in healthy volunteers. And the researchers were so amazed and impressed with the results that they said that the results were remarkable and the effect on cognitive function, in fact, was immediately evident. And the researchers had said that it was incredible in terms of this immediate aspect and really significantly improving speed and accuracy. And they said that usually they'll find that there's a trade-off, that you improve one at the expense of the other, but this didn't happen in that particular combination. There was another study that springs to mind that was combining ginkgo with conventional medication for ADHD, and they found that it increased and supported the efficacy of the conventional medicine by something like 35%. So it is something that we could also consider potentially as a co-treatment or a support for people and patients on particular conventional medicine. And there are a couple of other herbs I'd like to take the opportunity to mention as well. And one of them is gorgeous saffron. Now, we know it is the world's most expensive spice, and traditionally it was used for its antispasmodic and its antiseptic, but also antidepressant activity as well. But in relation to ADHD, it's actually thought that saffron and its active constituents can increase the reuptake inhibition of dopamine and norepinephrine, which of course are the key neurotransmitters indicated in ADHD and often are the target for the ADHD medications. And it's also been shown to be a GABA agonist as well. So it has a very specific role to play in relation to ADHD, and in addition to the neurotransmitter support, we're also going to see memory enhancement, antidepressant activity, anxiolytic activity, and it's also shown to have neuroprotective actions as well. So it may be not a herb that it is front and center in people's minds for supporting ADHD, but I would recommend that people look into the research for saffron, and it has such wonderful applications above and beyond ADHD. I do find it a particularly fascinating and very useful herb or spice. And then finally, rosemary. Rosemary is regarded in ancient writings to support and stimulate the mind, the memory, and the senses. Now, here in Australia, we actually use rosemary on various commemoration days, such as our Anzac Day and our Remembrance Day. Often we will wear a little sprig of rosemary because it is synonymous with remembrance and commemoration. In aromatherapy, and I remember being taught this when I studied aromatherapy as part of my naturopathic training, was that it helps to strengthen mental clarity and improves memory. So it's a great one to have on hand when you're doing exams. There was a study that was done showing that inhalation of rosemary essential oil increased alertness, and it helped them to feel more relaxed, but also their memory recall was much, much faster. Not necessarily more accurate, but much faster. And I think this was when they were doing particular mathematical calculations. But I do remember when I was studying naturopathy and learning aromatherapy, and we'd all learnt about rosemary essential oil. So we were really excited to use it for exams. So we would turn up to exams and we'd all have rosemary essential oil, would have either a bottle of it or we would have put some on a tissue. And you can imagine what the room actually smelt like by the end of the exam, because we were all there sniffing or inhaling rosemary essence to do everything and anything we could to improve our memory and our memory recall and get better results in exams. But I think they're probably the herbs that are my go-tos for focus and concentration in relation to that aspect of ADHD.
Well, certainly the rosemary worked because you have given us lots of information here. These are some really great options for, like you mentioned, concentration and focus. And then what about some additional nervous system support, you know, to really help manage the stresses and anxieties you had previously mentioned that can be a really significant feature in ADHD?
Oh, gosh, I think we're so lucky to have so many incredible options, don't we, to choose for supporting healthy stress responses and anxieties, not just in ADHD, but, you know, our society seems to be so steeped in stress and anxiety that can affect us at any age, and certainly children are not immune to it as well. And it can really affect how we think and how we feel and how we behave. Some of my favourites are... I love Skullcap. It's a beautiful nervine tonic, and I think it's a great herb for today's topic in relation to sensory hypersensitivity. When people seem to just kind of lose it over seemingly nothing, or they feel like, I remember reading this for rosemary. Someone was describing rosemary and they said it's for when people feel like every sound, every touch, every bit of light is personally attacking them. So they are on absolute sensory overload. They're at their end of their ropes and they're very exhausted on a deep level. I find Skullcap is also great for people who are quick to anger. They feel that irritation and that agitation. So from a nervine tonic perspective, for when we need nourishment for the nervous system on a very deep level where we're really at nervous depletion, it's really going to help to calm the nerves and heal the nervous system. So I think it really is an ideal support for patients with ADHD, and it's one of my favorites. All the time I find that it comes up for patients and people and is really ticks a lot of the boxes of what we are seeing in our modern day patients. Passionflower is another really wonderful herb to consider. And in fact, the eclectics in the US, they use passionflower to soothe agitation and nervousness. And they said it was really good for irritations of the brain, for feelings of anxiety, for sleep challenges as well. It was a specific herb for that. And overall, this nervous irritability. So they're all things that we commonly see in ADHD. I think, and not just for people with ADHD, but I think passionflower is a great herb for people who have those busy minds that get stuck in that circular thinking type of pattern. And it's great for sleep challenges when people do, you know, have trouble switching off their busy minds, which I think is a natural consequence of modern day living, really. There have been some great studies using valerian and passion flower in combination. And in fact, it was said that the two worked better in combination than alone for supporting healthy sleep. So be it if people are having trouble getting to sleep or trouble staying asleep, that particular combination worked fabulously. In the British Herbal Compendium, in fact, it indicates the use for passion flower to be for insomnia, for restlessness, for stress, and you know, nervous type conditions, and also anxiety. And it is specifically listed in the British Herbal Compendium for ADHD. For our younger ones, please also consider chamomile, or chamomile as you call it in the US. And it really is the quintessential children's herb. And when, for those children that you know that they're feeling really sensitive and everything is just hurting their feelings, chamomile is a wonderful herb to have. I remember Angela Highwood referring to it as a mother's hug, and I think that really delightfully illustrates the benefits of chamomile. It is a lovely carminative, not just for the mind, but also for our digestive system as well. It's one of my favourites for children and also adults who perhaps have a nervous tummy. It helps to really gently relax our intestinal muscles and has a slight bitterness to it as well. For adolescents, adults, I might consider kava, for example, if anxieties predominate. We don't tend to recommend kava for young children, but certainly adolescents and adults, if, you know, anxiety is a driving feature. But there are so many wonderful options, as I said, to choose from, and it seems to be everybody has their favourites. I also would always give some type of adaptogenic and tonic support, be it ashwagandha or rhodiola or perhaps Korean ginseng, might be valuable as well. So adaptogen and tonics are really going to be great for helping people with ADHD really to adapt to that stress response. And help us to deal with that stress. But what I really love about adaptogens is they help us to build up our responses to future threats as well. So they're really about not only, as I said, dealing with that immediate stress, but helping us to handle any future stresses that may come our way as well. So I do find adaptogens and tonics really empowering herbs in that sense. But as I said, Dana, you know, you've probably got your favourites. I'm sure all of the listeners have their favourites, and every patient that we have is individual. So some might resonate better with those patients than other herbs. But that's the wonder about what we do.
Well, thank you so much. Of course, there's so many herbs here that all of our listeners can choose from. But before we finish, do you have any final words for our listeners today?
It would probably be to remind them that ADHD is complex and it's multifaceted. It's a multifactorial disorder involving, you know, many, many factors. And I think there are a lot of, you know, really desperate parents out there who really need and really deserve some credible options. And I think we certainly have that in botanical support and whole food support, but also the diet and lifestyle insight that we have as well is so valuable to share with these patients. And also there are a lot of adults, of course, and adolescents who are seeking support and credible and meaningful options as well. And I think what we do exceptionally well as healthcare professionals is to support, first and foremost, support our patients as individuals with a very functional-based approach as well. And I think this is going to be ideal for ADHD. So, as I said, botanicals and whole food support, diet and lifestyle, with that support and advice, we really can provide our patients who are, you know, I've read about someone talking about ADHD saying they were the owner of ADHD. So I think we can really support our patients who own ADHD with very clinically measurable results and can greatly and very positively impact their lives in very meaningful ways. And when we are talking about the impact of herbal prescribing specifically, there's probably no area more important and impactful that we can do than facilitating an optimal stress response. And at the end of the day, this is so essential in all of the cases and presentations of ADHD, as well as really modern day living.
Jo, thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Dana.